it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And hello again. Welcome to episode 6 of the Hockey News on the Cube podcast brought to you by BetMGM. My name is Will McLaren. His name is Jamie Tozer. And Jamie, before we begin, tell us where you've been this time. I think you were out on the left coast once again over the last week or so.
Yep. No one can question my fandom with the Calgary Hitmen now after following them for eight days now on the Pacific Northwest. Went to 5 Hitmen games in the Seattle suburbs and Eastern Washington and then down to Portland. So great trip though. Didn't rain once, which is like
pretty much a miracle.
There is actually some forest fire risks, which is very rare for this time of year, apparently. So extremely dry down there, but it was good for me because no rain. It was great.
Excellent, excellent. Well, your membership in the Pavel Brendel fan club is in the mail, and I know so. There's only going to be a certain generation of people that are going to understand that reference, but so be it. I had to say it. So we're going to have a guest coming on here midway through the show. It's Thomas Beauregard. He had his number 28 retired by the Acadie Bathurst Titans over this past weekend. And also, we want to hear from you, the viewers. Have you got a question? Have you got a comment? Have you got a suggestion? Do you want to see something improved? Because we all know there's room for that. Reach out to us via Twitter. You see our Twitter handles in our names down below. So let's start things off, Jamie, with news that happened about 12 hours or so after we stopped recording last week. Came out of Drummondville, and it was the firing of their head coach, Steve Hartley.
Yeah, I think it was a little surprising. I thought, you know, we knew the Volts weren't maybe having the picture or the season they had kind of envisioned, but they had some injury issues, had a bit of a challenging schedule. But I guess they were just a little bit flat. But I think, you know, the timing was still a little bit surprising. I think maybe people thought that we'd get a little bit of a longer leash for Hartley, but he had been there for a few years. So maybe when you look at the whole picture, it was time for a shakeup. And they were coming off a challenging road trip too. They had a big win against Moncton, but then lost to St. John and Bathurst. So, you know, that's not an ideal road trip for a team that's, we kind of expect to be hitting that upswing now. So, but it's still a little bit of surprise, I thought.
Yeah, no, it's not too often that you see a team with a record like that at this time of the season make a switch quite like that. I know when I saw the news come through my socials, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting to see. He spent, you know, the better part of, I think it was part of 7 seasons, yeah, in Drummondville. And, you know, to your point, Jamie, about coaches, you know, the old cliche, they're hired to be fired. Maybe that's part of it. You know, and all in his defense, to some extent, you know, 3 of his biggest pieces have either not been in the lineup at all this year or yeah, have been out for substantial periods of time between Dion and Maverick Lemieux and Riley Mercer as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult to, and in a very contentious Western Conference at that, mm-hmm, kind of a difficult scenario. But nonetheless, you know, we're looking at it from the outside, and Philip Boucher and his crew and the management side of things in Drummondville, obviously, saw that it was an opportunity for a change. And as a result, Boucher is actually back behind the bench. That's probably the first time he's been behind the bench since his days with the Quebec Ramparts, about 7 or 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the hunt for a new head coach is underway in Drummondville. And I guess the next part of the rumor mill will be, who's it going to be?
Yeah, we will see. And, you know, curious to see if we see much of a turnaround too with the Volts. You know, when you look at their lineup, they've got a good team. It's still maybe a little bit young, but they've got a good roster. But you know, they're 10 and 11 this season, which I think's a little underwhelming for what you see on paper. Had a challenging start to the post Hartley era last weekend, but we'll see what they can do moving forward, especially once they get or presumably they get a replacement.
Yeah, three home games for the Volts this week. They are against Blainville, Bois Beyond, Sherbrooke, and Chicoutimi. So definitely a couple of games in there in Blainville and Chicoutimi that should be a little bit on the winnable side, you would think, for Drummondville. And speaking of the Sherbrooke Phoenix, well, they have been winning. They actually won the marquee matchup of the season to date on Sunday, defeating the Quebec Rampart 5-1. That ends the Rampart's 17-game point streak, and they did it in rather definitive fashion, Jamie.
Yeah, 5-1 final, and you know, it's funny when I was thinking about this after I saw that final score. It's funny how these long streaks, they often end with a kind of a lopsided loss. You know, you think team that's running that well, I think that it would end in, you know, a shootout loss, an overtime loss, but it seems like more often than not, they end in a big thud like this. And saw some quotes today from Patrick Waugh, who said he kind of knew going into the game that his team didn't look the greatest that morning. They had a tough schedule that week. That was the second meeting with Sherbrooke too. So it wasn't, didn't seem overly shocked with the results. And we saw some fireworks from Patrick Waugh during the week on the bench and off the bench too. I think, you know, a big momentum push, I think, for Sherbrooke, who, like you said, is off to a really good start. But I think now this is just a big confidence boost for this team, I'm sure, knowing that they can beat a really good team like Quebec rather decisively like they did.
Yeah, and really, Jamie, the Rampart are the only team that the Phoenix are looking up at in the standings. So, I mean, that is the test if you're that squad. And I took in probably about 2.5 periods of that game Sunday afternoon, and the one thing that impressed me consistently was the fact that the Phoenix, from a defensive standpoint, were keeping Quebec contained. Not a huge number of quality chances, almost nothing within, you know, as they say, the house between the hash marks for the Rampart. Sherbrooke actually outshot Quebec 40-20 in that game. And in a lot of ways, that was very indicative of how the play materialized on the ice. Joshua Waugh with 3 goals and 2 assists, as we've come to expect from him. But definitely a statement by the Phoenix, who also, as a reminder, you know, lost a close 1-goal game to Quebec. You mentioned they played twice last week. That was a 1-goal game up in Quebec on Wednesday night last week. So, you know, definitely a couple of teams that if they have the opportunity to face one another in the postseason, obviously it would be deep in the postseason, if not in the final. It would be very interesting to see how that series would turn out. If this past week was any indication, we'd be in for a great show.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a little bit of bad blood between the teams, at least off the bench a little bit or off the ice a little bit. And Will, you followed the league longer than me. Have you ever seen an athletic therapist be ejected from a game and then receive a suspension?
No, I don't think so. I was just trying to jog my own memory, and you know, things got a little bit interesting back in the day, no question. Obviously we've seen coaches get tossed. I can think of one assistant coach, and that was Sean McKenzie in his days with the Mooseheads, probably about 25 years ago. Remember him getting the boot? A trainer? Actually, yes, I've heard of it happening once, and I think it might have been in Cape Breton about 25 years ago. Okay. I'm not going to get into the details because I can't remember them that well. It was a quarter century ago, but and the only reason why I knew about it was he did show up in the game sheet as getting a game misconduct during a brawl of some sort. So not unprecedented, but first time I've heard of this in a while, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's very like old school cue, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's you think of like the trainer in Slapshot or something like that, where you know, he's just you know on the bench and just giving it to them. But it does make things interesting for better or for worse, and it creates some headlines and creates some interest from some corners. But the Rampart, they're back in action this week for three. They're in Victoriaville, then back home for games against Baie-Comeau and Gatineau. That latter game, not going to be an easy one either. The Phoenix, they get Gatineau as well on the road, though, to start their week. And, of course, the aforementioned game in Drummondville as well. We said we were going to have Thomas Beauregard on. He'll be on momentarily. But before we get to that, something that's linked to him, and that is players scoring 70 goals in the season. It's almost hard to believe, Jamie, but once upon a time, this was not the most unusual thing to happen in the queue. In fact, there was five players in a 10-year span back in the late 90s and into the 2000s who turned the trick. A few notable names, Beauregard is one, you know, Brad Richards, Ladislav Nagy, they were amongst that crew. But nowadays, not only has the 70-goal man disappeared, so has the 60-goal man. In fact, that hasn't happened since Thomas Beauregard scored 71. And my question for you, Jamie, is do you think that era has passed? Do you think we'll ever see somebody score at that prolific of a rate in the Quebec League again?
I think those days have passed. And the main reason why is I just think it's difficult to play that many games now so that you can score 71 goals. If you're good enough to score 70 goals and you're under 20, you're obviously going to be playing a lot of international play. You're probably going to miss some time in NHL camps. And if you're 20, you're probably going to be in the AHL where an NHL club can control you, or you're going to be in the ECHL, which is considered to be much better than it was 20 years ago. So I just think playing enough games to get 70 goals is really difficult now. I definitely think we'll see players on pace to reach that mark. So slightly over goal per game. I definitely think that's possible. And we've probably seen that a few times since Beauregard's left the league. But I just think getting in enough games to score that many goals is too difficult now.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And the one caveat that I will throw into the mix here, if it does happen, I think it's going to have to be the residual effect of a substantial rule change, which is really what caused the last two to take place. We'll talk about the last five. There's Ladislav Nagy, Brad Richards, Simon Gamache. Those all happened in back-to-back-to-back years, 99, 2000, 2001, when the league was a lot more wide open. The league was older. The quality of overagers, which we discussed just last week, Jamie, was a little bit higher. Guys weren't going to the pro ranks maybe quite as quick as they are now. AHL wasn't as young as it was then, for example. And then we didn't have anything of that caliber until 2006, and that was Maxime Boisclair. He had 70, and then Beauregard 71 the year after. And what happened, of course, in 2005 was they removed the red line. No more two-line passes. Tag up offside was eliminated. The game became much quicker in very rapid fashion to boot. And I think defensively there's a lot of adaptation that hadn't quite yet taken place. Yeah. And I think that's what it would take. And that'd be about the only caveat. And really what's left? Goaltending equipment getting even smaller, the net's getting bigger. You know, some of these more out and left field ideas that sometimes come up from time to time when people are, you know, talking about the rules of the game. I don't think you'll see anything that radical change, because quite frankly, I think the most radical changes have already been made. And, you know, as a result, I agree with you, Jamie. I can't see it happening again.
Would be crazy if it did, though. Man, imagine.
It would be fun to watch.
No,
I'll buy a ticket. Yeah,
16 or 17-year-old. I was thinking, too.
I'll buy a ticket for that any day of the week. And that's kind of what it would have to be. You think probably like the next, you know, Sidney Crosby. You know, he had 50-some his first year, 66 his draft year. That's probably what it would take.
Or, you know, a real wild card option that I was thinking about today, an import comes in from a really weak hockey country that just doesn't have an international team, which seems extremely rare that it would happen, but I guess that's a possibility, and he wouldn't miss time.
And you've kind of hit the nail on the head there in terms of Vladislav Nagy. Don't forget, you know, he was Slovakian, and that hockey federation was in its infancy when he came over here. So, you know, those are very good points. But we'll see in the years to come. And speaking of 70 goal scorers from the past in the QMJHL, we just happen to have one of them here with us here tonight. He was a 5-year forward with the Agadir Bathurst Titans. He left the Q in 2007 as an overager, 71 goals that last season, and he came back to Bathurst this past weekend to see his number 28 lifted to the rafters in Bathurst. Thomas Beauregard, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first things first, Thomas, what about the weekend that just passed? Just tell us, first of all, when you found out that the Titan were going to honor you in this manner, and was that your first time back in Bathurst since your playing days?
Yeah, well, I went back a couple times, probably 14 years ago, for a golf tournament just after my junior career. But, yeah, they called me a couple months ago to let me know that they will retire my number. And it was such a surprise. I never thought about something like that. And when they called me and announced it to me, and actually it was Sylvain Couturier who called me first and tell me the good news. And I was speechless. It was such an honor.
Spent your entire junior career with the Teton. What are some of the big memories that really stick out from your playing days?
First of all, I got drafted there. My draft year was in Bathurst, and I remember when I got in town, I was 15, and I told my dad, I'm like, I'm not gonna play here ever. Because I didn't know like small cities. I was from Montreal, and I was used to a big city, and anyway, like a lot going on. So when I got the Bathurst, and I was thinking to myself, oh, there's not much to do here. And finally, like the next day when Leo Gui said, well, we're drafted Thomas Beauregard. Well, I was really surprised, and back then it was the best day of my life. It was just, I was just so happy to get drafted in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and since then, well, yeah, the love story with Bathurst began.
You know, and you bring up a good point, Thomas. It's almost hard to believe now what it was like, especially the first few years that the Titans were in Bathurst. As you said, small city, one of the smallest markets in the CHL. But, you know, there was nights when, you know, you would have a third of the population of the city, you know, packed to the rafters at the KC Irving Center to watch you guys play. And I remember talking to a member of the team from a couple years earlier than that. And he once almost described it as almost like a fishbowl. You know, you were kind of insulated, but isolated and just, you know, sort of living with an entire city who knew you. An entire city of hockey fans. Just try and describe what it was like to go into that atmosphere, especially at a young age like that.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was the perfect fit for a junior hockey town, for a junior hockey team, for young guys, because you're going to play major junior mostly because you're playing hockey and that you're going there to play hockey. And in Bathurst, well, like you said, it's a small town. It's the smallest market in the Canadian Hockey League. So you're going there and your focus is on hockey. So it was the best thing. You know, like I couldn't ask for more. I mean, it was just so many good memories. It was the best time of my life. It was just like, everyone knows you. You're going around town, like even when the team is winning or even when the team is losing, like everyone loves you. And on top of that, like, it's not like you're going, like, it's not about how many goals you score or how many points you have. Like, just And I told the players that, like, before the game on Saturday, and like, it's not about goals at both points. It's about like being kind with people, because they love you. Like, they're everything for these fans in Bathurst, because there's only like the Titans there, and people live for the Titans. And it was just like something, like, so many good memories. And it was great stuff.
Now, speaking of players who recently retired, Matthew Perreault. Now, you had 124 points in 2006-2007, but you barely finished first in team scoring. Perreault finished just behind you with 119 points. What was it like playing with him?
It was the best player I ever played with. He was a magician. But we had that chemistry that it's so hard to explain. It was just like, we knew, like, he was the playmaker and I was the finisher. But it was just that kind of chemistry that you don't even have to talk. And we knew exactly what we were going to do. Like, I knew exactly what he was going to do on the ice, and he knew where I was going to be. And it was just like, he was so easy to play with. But we had that chemistry that it's hard to explain. Like, you have to live it. Like, it was every night. Every night. It was just like, we were unstoppable. And it was just like, at some point, we were like, yeah, it's gonna stop at some point. And that year, no, it was just, everything was awesome. It was just awesome playing with him. And yeah, he was our best player. So I was I'm so grateful that I was the guy to play with him. And yeah, it was a great, great year.
The 71 goal season, before that, your career high was 46 goals. Going into that year, did you think you had the potential to reach 71, or was it no?
No. I never thought about it. When I scored 46, I might have been able to do 50 the next year. But on top of that, like, my 19-year-old year was the more fun of all five of them, because we had a really, really good team. We lost to Quebec in game 7 semifinal. If we would have won, we would have went straight to the Memorial Cup, because it was against Moncton, and Moncton was the host back then. But it never crossed my mind to score 70 goals or 80 goals or whatever. I just wanted to win. And yeah, but when I scored, I remember I scored my 50th and at my 39 game. So I was like, maybe
it's pretty good.
Maybe I'm not going to stop there, because there was a lot of game left. And yeah, so yeah, well, it was just a good year. It was like 50 goals in 39 games. I mean, yeah, it was, I remember when Christmas break that happened, I came home with 48 goals. So basically, like, a lot of times, like, we're saying, well, if you go home by Christmas with 20 or 25 goals, you're going to have a really good year. And yeah, I remember I came back home with 48 goals. So it was something.
So there you go. What does Thomas Beauregard and Wayne Gretzky have in common right there? 50 and 39. We'd learn something new right there.
Different league.
Slightly different. I do want to talk a little bit about that 05-06 season, Thomas. I'm glad you brought it up. I remember being in the building for game 6 of that Quebec series, and that is still one of the more electric atmospheres that I've ever seen for a hockey game at any level, NHL, junior, you name it. And everybody knew what was on the line. You guys had to win to stay alive in the series, which you did. Yeah. Fans from all over the place. And for you guys on the ice, and you know, keep in mind, too, something else that gets missed along the way there in that season, you guys had a coaching change about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the season. You know, Mario DeRoche lost his job. John Chabot came in. Yeah. Now, for you guys who were still with a somewhat newish coach, certainly not one you'd been with all year long, you know, he's got his system in place. And you got to come out and play in this basically cauldron of sound of you know, 3,500 rabid fans to keep your season alive. Just explain for a 19-year-old such as yourself, what is that experience like?
Well, we knew we had a real, real good team that year. And we were basically built to go all the way. And I don't remember exactly when it was, maybe in February that we changed coach. But something needed to happen because we were on, I believe it was on a 4 or 5 game losing streak, just coming into the playoffs, and the atmosphere weren't great. And so something needed to happen. And yeah, they made the decision to change coach. And when John came, he changed everything. I mean, culture wise, and he was phenomenal. As a human being, as just a great man, just a great man. And I don't know, he found a way to brought us back all together, and the chemistry that came. And yeah, it was just a change needed to be done. And John came, and man, we had a good ride. We had a good ride, and unfortunately, we lost game 7. Unfortunately, they had Radulov in Quebec. So, I mean, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, and I can tell you from a person living in Moncton back in the day, there was a lot of people in that town that wanted to see Bathurst as a second rep as well. It would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, Moncton versus Bathurst. New Brunswick or Valerie, and especially like one of the two best friends, I believe it was Ted Nolan with big friend with John Chabot. So it would have been like just great thing for New Brunswick. But unfortunately we lost game 7, and yeah, it is what it is.
No, but still a significant career and a very successful one nonetheless. Thomas, once again, congratulations on the honor, my man, and good luck in all of your future endeavors.
Thank you very much, guys. Very appreciate it.
And thanks once again to Thomas Beauregard for taking the time to talk to us, and also his child, who was in the background as well, who wanted to get their 2 cents in on their dad's Q career. So always great to have the whole family join in on the Hockey News on the Q, brought to you by BetMGM. Before we go any further, I do want to point out one thing from earlier in the show. Has a trainer ever been kicked out? And I did stumble across mentally one example, but stick tap to our great producer, Connor Somerville, who pointed out it did happen in MLS this season. So for all of you who think soccer is boring, I give you Exhibit A. Let's move on to our NHL team profile. We're going to stay out on the West Coast. We were in Los Angeles last week. We're going up the PCH to San Jose this week. Only one player in the queue that is currently drafted by the Sharks, Jamie, but definitely a strong prospect in his own right, Jake Furlong.
Yeah, and it always seems like the Sharks have you know, one or two guys in the system who are queue guys, and that's kind of continuing, it seems. You know, Will, you watch Furlong a lot more than I do, but from what I've gathered, he seems to be kind of like a hardworking, physical type defenseman. Not the biggest guy, but you know, he's a hardworking player. Really seems to get the most every shift he plays. Starting to see more offensive stuff from him. 14 points already this season in just 21 games. So that's pretty good. And we've talked about Moosehead defensemen before on the show. You know, they're going to need to really have a good season on the back end, because we know offensively they're extremely good, but if there's any question marks with Mooseheads, it's on the back end. So they really need all those experienced defensemen that they do have to really step up this season and next.
Yeah, Furlong is really the leader. Him and Cam Wynot course, who we've already talked about on this show, the Calgary Flames prospect. They're really, the veterans of this crew. Brady Schultz, of course, also coming into his own in Halifax this year as well. But the thing is with Jake Furlong, that I know I've noticed watching him, this is now his third season in the league. That draft year, he really started to push the offense a lot more. And it was almost maybe partly by design, but also partly by necessity, because there just wasn't a lot of talent on the back end in Halifax that was capable of consistently driving the offense. And he started to really refine making those good first passes, running the first power play, things of that nature. There were some stumbling blocks along the way, but you could see as the year continued on his composure and the fact that he was paired with numerous partners, why not being one of them throughout the year, he seemed to be very adaptable in that regards as well. So going to be very interesting. Of course, he's yet another guy growing up in this up-and-coming Mooseheads team. You know, we always talk about Jordan Dume, Marcus Vidicek, and guys like James Swan, guys like that. But, you know, don't forget about Jake Furlong. He's going to be a leader on the back end definitely this year in Halifax and, you know, for next year as well.
Yeah.
Now in the AHL, there's a fair amount of talent there too, on both on the back end and up front, and at least one guy who has a little bit of Memorial Cup experience as well, Jamie.
Yeah, Jeffrey Viel, who's a very well-known Teton alumni. This is a very Teton show we've got going on here. One of the things I noticed when I was looking up his numbers, I haven't followed him that closely since he left the queue, but he was the captain of the Teton their Memorial Cup season. He had an A on his jersey in his second year of pro hockey. So obviously a guy who is thought of very highly in the Sharks organization. I don't believe he's ever drafted in the NHL. So a great story as a free agent. And has put up pretty good numbers in pro hockey too. And played in quite a few games with San Jose last year. So really a great story. Of a guy never to be drafted in the NHL, gets a chance to go pro and has had a pretty strong pro career so far.
Yeah, and, he was a very gritty, 200-foot guy in the queue. And it's obvious that those skills have transferred very well to the pro ranks. Of course, he's seen some time in the NHL as well. Adam Raska is another notable. He was a defenseman in Rimouski a couple of years back, a member of the Czech national team as well. He's getting his feet wet in the pro ranks. And another person, I'd be remiss if I don't mention this because of our contemporary over in the WHL podcast, Liz Child, but Artemi Gnaitsev, who spent three seasons in Chicoutimi, was a second-round pick of the Sharks back in 2019. Very offensive first defenseman as well, who's developing a very solid pro game as well. And then, of course, the ECHL, there's one player with the Wichita Thunder, Stephane Fournier, another Memorial Cup winner with the Halifax Mooseheads back in 2013. And one of my favorite players in Moosehead's history, just a solid all-around guy.
Louis Domaniac, too.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jamie, for picking up the slack there. Rest in peace. So our good friends at the Andrew Stragan Bank Coliseum. And of course, in the NHL, I mean, three guys and all of them who made a significant impact in the queue in one way or the other.
Yeah, Timo Meier, who's turned into a real star, was obviously a big star in junior as well. Evgeny Svechnikov, who had a great career with the Screaming Eagles, who wasn't here for a long time, but he was here for a good time, that's for sure. And then way back, Mark Edward Vlasic, Memorial Cup champion, which again we talked about a little bit with Thomas Beauregard, that Memorial Cup year in 2006. And you know, kind of crazy to see. I was looking at his numbers today. Won a Memorial Cup in 2005-06 with the Remparts, and then the next season played a full season in the NHL, which you almost never see now with a defenseman. So that just shows how good Vlasic is.
Yeah, at the time, I mean, I remember very well, people were expecting Mark Edward Vlasic to remain in junior at least one more year. He was only 18 at that time. And for him to make the jump, and it kind of caught everybody by surprise because, you know, he was talented, don't get me wrong, and it showed all throughout that playoff run and through the Memorial Cup. But there was a couple of other guys on that back end. Michael Sursum was one that came to mind, who was a former first overall Euro pick. And I believe a Pittsburgh prospect at one point, who was maybe considered the better of the two prospects at one point. And Vlasic just kind of, you know, it was explosive up front with guys like Alexander Radulov and Brent Aubin. So Vlasic just kind of plied his trade quietly, and it ended up parlaying into an extensive NHL career, which continues to this day. So our 2023 draft prospect of the week, we're going to go to Shikunmi. He's the last B-ranked prospect out of the queue that we have featured. It's a last but not least, and he's certainly a guy who would stick out on the ice and in a crowd, defenseman Mateo Mann.
Yeah, I was curious about, because I was reading a lot about him, his draft year today, and he was kind of considered that a guy who needed to really step up his physical play coming in the league, even though he was 6'3", 200 pounds at the time. Now he's listed at 6'6", 222, so he's grown even after he's stepped into the queue, which is pretty wild. Definitely a bit of a more lesser-known prospect, I'd say, heading into the NHL draft from the queue. Maybe a bit of an underrated prospect. You know, I think he's maybe flying a little bit under the radar, just because he doesn't have the offensive numbers that we see from other defensemen. So I think if he can elevate his offensive game a little bit, I think we'll probably see him move up in the draft rankings more. But as we know, once you get older, you start to see a little bit more offense from guys. So I mean, maybe he could be a late round steal for an NHL team.
Yeah, and you know, like I say, he's not there really to be an offensive catalyst. You know, definitely a defensive first guy, and plus he's also been out of the lineup for the better part of a month with an upper body injury. He should be back within about a week or so, and continuing to try and get his stock to rise in the 2023 NHL draft. Just want to remind you one more time before we sign off, you got a question, you got a comment, get a suggestion, send it our way via Twitter at Will McWriter, thank you, and at @station_nation. We would be happy to take any of your comments and put them on the air. Let's hear from you. So Jamie, just to wrap things up quickly, what are you looking forward to this week in the queue?
Thomas Couture returns to the Maritimes, playing in Moncton and St. John. Curious to see how that goes. And you mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, Gatineau, big week for them. They're on a 5-game winning streak, but they've got a tough schedule this week. Sherbrooke, Victoriaville, and Quebec. So curious to see what Gatineau can do.
Yeah, it's time for a little bit of separation, perhaps, in the upper echelon in the QMJHL. Lots of great action coming our way this week. And that will do it for us for this week. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. This has been another episode of the Hockey News on the Q. We'll see you next week.